The Mormon Expression Podcast is made possible through the support of our listeners. Consider making a donation or purchasing a subscription today at mormonexpression.com. The books you hear discussed on the podcast and others that we recommend can be purchased by clicking on the store link. And to those of you who have already contributed, thanks.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson, and tonight I have, I guess it's not the nighttime. I usually do this at night, but we're here early in the morning.
That's right.
I have somebody I've been looking forward to talking to for quite some time, the one and only Tom Kimball. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Hey, John. Good. I'm doing really well. Really well. Thank you.
Now, Tom, you're currently, what exactly is your official title at Signature Books?
I'm the marketing director at Signature Books. And basically, I'm just the guy that sells the books.
Well, that's the most important position, isn't it?
As far as I'm concerned, yeah.
Well, Tom, you've been kicking around the Mormon world for some time, and you're a fascinating guy to talk to. Why don't you give us a little background as to who you are and kind of what's your relationship with the church?
As far as like my family, none of my ancestors came to Utah on planes or trains. They all walked across with pioneer groups. I have polygamists on both sides. My mom is a Smith, my dad's a Kimball. I'm related to most Mormons twice.
Sometimes three or four times, I guess. Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said sometimes three or four times, probably.
Yeah, I had to leave Utah to get out of the gene pool. I grew up in the Salt Lake Valley. I grew up on the west side. As far as the Kimball family is concerned, you know, I come through Valette Murray, the first wife. We used to go to the Kimball family reunions when I was a kid, and President Kimball would speak, and there would be 8,000 or 9,000 people show up to these reunions. Wow. And my dad was the Kimball family historian, and so I always had books around, and my dad ran a 70s Quorum bookstore in the house, so there was always books in the house, and I've always just sort of, I saw my uncles and my dad having these conversations about books. And in my mind as a kid, I always equated being an adult with having a book collection and being able to talk intelligently about Mormon books.
Yeah, I too love Mormon books. I say from time to time, I collect them. I'm a minor collector, but you know, I go into those DIs and find gems every once in a while, and it always breaks my heart that those books all get shredded about every week, that they don't get bought. So yeah, I too have a passion for the Mormon literature.
I did an LDS mission to Birmingham, Alabama. We can talk about that. That was an eye opener for me. I'm the baby of eight kids, and my older brothers went foreign. And so, when I got sent stateside, I was a little disappointed.
Well, Alabama's pretty foreign. I mean, I was born in Alabama. So,
Oh, you're kidding.
I left when I was an infant, but, that's about as foreign as you can get stateside, isn't it?
And it's in the heart of the Bible Belt, and we would have pastors track the same neighborhood, the day after we would track them, and any of our return appointments, we'd come back and there would be the minister sitting there right in the living room, and we got anti-Mormon every day, so. it was like being put in the middle of being thrown out into a pond full of piranhas. It was an eye opener for me, for sure. Anyway, I did a mission in Alabama. When I came home from Alabama, I went back east. I had a sister living in Virginia, and I moved out to Virginia for 5 years, lived in the Washington, D.C. area, where I met my spouse. And I worked for the government out there, did some overseas tours. My father became ill, and I came back to Utah in 1995 and asked my wife if I could work at a bookstore. And I told her I just want to do Christmas help. It was late October, early November, and I hired on with the Deseret Book downtown. And I promised my wife in January I'd just go get a real job. That was 15 years ago, and I keep telling her in January I'm going to get a real job. So you
started out with the Deseret Book. Now, what was your role there?
I started out as just as Christmas help, and then my fantasy in my head that I built up was that we would sit around during our break and talk about theology and history. And, you know, when I got there, it wasn't anything like that. There was, you know, about a 75 to 80 employees. And really, there was only one other guy there that I could talk intelligently about Mormon history and Mormon books with. And that's a kid by the name of Matt McBride. He works over at Deseret Book still. He does their CD-ROM projects. Mm-hmm. He's a sharp cat. He speed reads. And so I'd hand him a book and say, Matt, I need to be up on this book. And he'd take it back to the back room, and 20 minutes later, he'd come back and have it completely read.
Wow.
And he really is an amazing kid, you know, or not a kid, he's the same age as I am, but he's just a great guy. So anyway, and I worked for Deseret Book for a year and a half. Kurt Bench hired me to be his book buyer and salesman, and I worked for him for 3 years, and I got wooed away to work for Greg Coford for a summer, and then the Signature Book marketing position opened up, and I jumped on that. So I've worked for a lot of the publishers and book vendors in the Mormon world.
So Signature Books is kind of one of the areas I want to focus on this morning.
Sure.
I'm not sure everybody's listening is familiar with Signature Books. Maybe give us a background as to who Signature Books is.
Well, we're a publisher of scholarly books on Utah, Mormonism, Western Americana, and we do some comparative religion. Signature Books, I'm the last employee at Signature Books, so you'll forgive me as far as that. I don't have the far-reaching corporate memory. I started with Signature in 2001, January of 2001. But Signature Books has its origins, I feel, with the very first Sunstone Symposium. I believe that was in 1978. And Scott Kenny, who was the founder of Sunstone, was attending a session that was that had George Smith and John Sorensen. And George Smith was giving a paper on B.H. Roberts. And apparently, after George finished his paper, John Sorensen treated him fairly harshly. And Scott Kenny walked up to George after the session and said, you know, told him that he liked his paper and he thought that he did just fine, not to worry about, you know, the criticisms as much. About a year and a half later, Scott Kenny approached George about investing in a new book company he wanted to start, or publishing company he wanted to start. And George came in on that as one of the principal investors. And Signature Books opened its doors in 1980, and it published its first book in 1981.
What are some of the books that Signature is probably best known for? I mean, I can probably fill in the blanks, but I want to see what you come up with.
I think maybe a more important discussion is what are some of the turning points in Mormon history that are associated with publishing. You know, one that comes to mind that predates Signature would be the publishing of the Journal of Discourses by a quasi-fundamentalist group in, I think they were in Norway or Denmark. And I think Signature Books has had, well, I guess the reason I bring that up is I don't think anything was ever the same after that set of books was published.
Now, are you talking about the little softback red edition of the Journal of Discourse, or before that?
Before that, I believe it was in the 50s. There was a hardback set published of the whole set, and it's sort of the classic design that you still see around for the Journal of Discourses.
So that was a turning point in Mormon publishing. Oh, I mean, what was the impact of that event?
The average person never had access to those speeches, and I think at that point that sort of made the public. It made those speeches available to the public, and people had never heard of, you know, the Orson Hyde, you know, speech on pre-Adamites, and they never, or the Adam God speeches by Brigham Young weren't that available, and suddenly all these really important speeches were sort of just kind of available to the public. It's like publishing the Bible, you know, for the first time. It made the public accessible to 19th century Mormonism. So if I translate it into Signature Books has had a handful of those moments where I think that the entire Mormon studies community spoke differently or communicated differently after these books were published. Certainly the Wilford Woodruff journals early on for Signature Books was a landmark moment when these journals and diaries were finally kind of available to the public. Another one that in my memory was Early Mormonism and the Magic Worldview, which was published in 1987. In 87.
That was Michael Quinn's book.
Mike Quinn's book, yeah. I remember attending my first Sunstone in 1990 and hearing about it then. I was a little bit of a latecomer. And everyone at this symposium spoke differently, and they were using terms and ideas from Mike's book there at the conference. And Mike was there at the conference. And I think that scholars just sort of spoke differently. One that is within, I did see the before and after was Todd Compton's In Sacred Loneliness. The fact that Joseph had 33 plus plural wives, and here were their biographies. Book collectors, historians, just people in my community, they spoke differently from the day that book came out. And there's been some recently. There's been Grant Palmer's Insider's View, and which is, you know, has been our number one bestseller since the day it came out every year. And also Simon Southerton's book on DNA in the Book of Mormon. I mean, I even saw Bill Maher show the other day, a YouTube of Bill Maher, and he spoke about DNA in the Book of Mormon. I mean, it really had long legs.
You know, the ones that seem to have made the most splash to me, maybe I'm off base, but Quinn's follow-up books to The Magic World on the Mormon Hierarchy seemed to get a lot of response, even from the church. I remember a lot of press releases and ink spilled over those.
You bet. My specific interest is in history, but Signature Books has had these moments with other books. They've had them in fiction, The Backslider by Levi Peterson. Everybody in Mormon lit talks about the cowboy Jesus. And if you haven't read that book, you're missing out.
Oh, The Backslider's great. I love that book.
Right.
Everyone who's connected to the Mormon church should be required to read The Backslider.
Right.
So that probably brings up a good point we should talk about. Some of these books we just talked about have been labeled anti-Mormon. How do you respond to the accusation that Signature Books is an anti-Mormon press?
Yeah, that's tough. Anti-Mormon is a moving target. I served my mission in Alabama, and I picked up that label real easily and flung it around pretty freely. But you know, there was people there that were full-time ministers making incredible salaries, and their full-time job within their ministry was to address the Mormon issue in that area. They had a newsletter that they sent around every month. They wrote pamphlets. They would, you know, like I said, they would tract behind us. You know, we tracked in Birmingham, and they'd come to go door to door right behind us and give little pamphlets away to the people that we'd spoken to. We'd show up to appointments, and these guys would be sitting there, you know, and it was, and I've sort of always related it to bigotry. It's easy to sling that term around, and I'll tell you, as I've sat here in the offices here at Signature Books, you know, I'm a return missionary. Gary's a return missionary. Ron's a return missionary. You know, we have, you know, up until a year ago, I was teaching Elders Quorum. All our family is Mormons. We live here. This is our tribe. And I've never heard anybody within the offices refer to ourselves as anti-Mormons. Certainly we are maybe social critics and maybe even historical critics, but that's kind of a loose term. And Grant Palmer once said, maybe an anti-Mormon is a person who lies. And if someone is lying for the church or against the church, they in effect are an anti-Mormon because they're betraying the church or they're picking on the church. I don't know. There's all kinds of ways to define it, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, the label, you know, gets kicked around really easily, I think. And I know especially there's some apologists and probably amateur apologists who just love to label everything and everybody who's critical of the church anti-Mormon. And I think as a people from both sides, we're not going to grow up and be a big boy in the world ecumenical community until we stop that division. You know, I think a good comparison is to the term anti-Semite. That has a real meaning, and those are people who are bigoted against a people. Anti-Semites don't really have much truck with, say, Judaism. They don't like Jews. And the problem is when Mormons label somebody anti-Mormon for, say, publishing a historical work that's, you know, might be marginally critical, what they're doing is they're diluting the term and they're forgetting all these nuances that we all have in terms of our own relationship to our families and our faith, just like you brought up.
Well, they're diluting the term, but I think they're also setting people up for a fall. You know, the things that I'm the most upset about with regards to my Mormonism, it has to do with the lies. You know, it has to do with people misrepresenting my faith and the things that I do believe. So much about my Mormonism that I love, and you know, the Signature Book staff went on a retreat last year, and we were talking with other people on this tour that we were on that are from New York and so forth, and they all commented how, first, that we were the coolest Mormons that they had ever heard of, and second, that we were Mormon, that we were Mormon. I mean, that's, it defined us. It's what we talked about. It's what we were interested in. And they, I don't think that they would have been able to differentiate, other than the fact that a lot of us were liberal, between the church going Mormon and a Signature Book Mormon. I mean, we're just Mormons to them. You know, and I think part of that is because we didn't walk around disparaging our people.
Yeah, I think in the Mormon world, much of what passes for anti-Mormon or criticism for many other religions would be tolerated right in the mainstream. I mean, a lot of things that have to be published, say, by Signature Press in the Mormon world might be published by a mainstream, you know, religiously organized entity. You know, for example, there's Catholic universities out there who would publish material on Catholicism on par with what you publish about Mormonism, and that's just not tolerated. You know, BYU would never put out some of the things that you all put out.
Right, right. Well, and I think that groups like the Church and BYU are in a bad spot to put out works about themselves. I think that the best type of people to publish on a group are people who are sort of on the margins, that who still love the tradition but are willing to try and look at it critically. I don't think that the people who work for the Church, work at BYU, who are being, you know, paid by their employer to be faithful to them, are in any position to be critics of them.
So does a Deseret Book carry any signature titles, or do they just have a blanket restriction?
That's evolved. When I worked for Deseret Book, we carried Sunstone, Dialogue, Journal of Mormon History, scads of signature book titles. And, you know, and I, when I first started as a bookseller, I didn't really differentiate signature books. I didn't really have that in my head that there was this, you know, this group signature books. I just looked at it as something akin to a university press like University of Illinois. You know, there was Carthage Conspiracy by Down Oaks, and there was Early Mormonism Magic Worldview by Mike Quinn. In my mind, they were just history books. I hadn't put them into camps or groups. When I left Deseret Book and the management changed, there was an ideological shift at Deseret Book in their buying office, and they still carry a lot of the books that they did carry prior to 2000, but since then they really have not picked up any new titles, maybe two or three, and I hope that changes.
Yeah, there's been a trend, and I don't expect you to, you know, necessarily comment on this, but, you know, the past few years, Deseret Book has been buying up and kind of doing some, in my opinion, heavy-handed competitive practices. You know, they bought up Siegel, they bought up Bookcraft, they bought up, you know, and I hope it's a temporary management trend that turns around. I think the book world of Utah and the Mormon world has been less better off because of these tactics.
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, I have a lot of strong feelings for Deseret Book. When I, you know, in the discussion of anti-Mormons, when I took an overseas job in Australia, and when I got there, all my bosses and a lot of my coworkers in my office were almost exclusively from Texas, and I'd say 70% of them were either neighbors or relatives of each other back in Texas, and they had a Bible study group, and they showed the Godmakers as a staff meeting 3 days before I got there. And, you know, if you want to talk about anti-Mormons, you know, I was prevented from getting leadership positions. I worked my butt off for these guys, and, you know, they would take the things that I did, and they would twist them around and use them against me. And I just felt like I had to always be really on the top of my game and really work hard every day and be very careful every day just to survive. And it was a very hostile environment. And when I left there, I had a pretty low self-esteem. These guys had really spent 3 years just, you know, they'd play anti-Mormon speeches over our radio that we had in our office while I'm there, you know. And I just had this, I had this complex about myself. And I show up to Deseret Book, and, you know, I'm so used to just having to just, you know, go after it to just hold my own, that these guys had never seen anything like that, or they hadn't seen someone like me. And, you know, people would walk in and I'd start telling them about these books that I loved. And a guy would ask a question. I'd say, well, I know there's this book and I know there's that book. And I'd sit him down and I'd start loading up books. And I remember the boss coming out and saying, you know, seeing this mess of books and going, what's going on? And one of the other employees said, oh, you know, it's okay. And I remember this one guy that took three employees to carry all of his books down to his car. And, you know, they just hadn't seen that type of salesmanship in a while up there. And I remember when it came time to decide, you know, who's going to stay for the Christmas help and stuff. And they didn't even interview me. It was a foregone conclusion that they were going to keep me. Huh. And I remember there was this moment where in the evenings, you're supposed to stick to your cash register. I guess they wanted you to protect the cash register, right? Well, I was so used to just wandering out and saying, hey, what are you looking for? And engaging people and selling books that, you know, I had a hard time doing that. And my supervisor came over and yelled at me because I'd walked away from the cash register. And I did it again. And there was this customer there and I was talking, I was walking him through the bookshelves and my supervisor went and got the manager and drug him out there and said, Tom won't stay next to his register. And he looked at the supervisor and said, leave Tom alone. So the reason I'm telling you that story is that I have, these guys saved my self-esteem. They really took care of me. And so, you know, if Signature or if Desert Books do, you know, is changing their ideology or doing something that I may not agree with, you have to understand that I and those people are still there. And I love those people over there. And I just think the world of them. It is unfortunate that, and even when I was there, Desert Book considered themselves sort of more of a gift book company. They had moved away from being the outlet for Mormon studies and Mormon resources to becoming more of a gift book company. And now I think they've moved into an art outlet. You know, the $200 to $300 art item is really what keeps them afloat.
Yeah, when you go in the store these days, there's not much in the line of books. I was in there a couple weeks ago and bouncing around and I'm always interested in which books they wrap up. You know, the David O. McKay biography was wrapped. I assume that was, you know, kind of like your brown wrapper, the pornography sort of thing. But
right.
Yeah. I have respect for those guys, and there's a lot of great titles that come out. We need Bookcraft and the others back, and I don't know when that's going to happen. But
you know, as a bookseller, there was close to 500 vendors, individual Mormon book vendors, and they've come all the way down because of the economy. We've lost a lot of those stores, and I think there was last I counted there was 140, 130 vendors. I mean, that's how drastically the market has decreased. So yeah, maybe with the new economy there'll be new outlets and so forth. But book publishing is becoming more and more bleak, and it's the worst business model you can imagine. the margins. I worked at a jewelry store in Virginia, and, you know, in gold and diamonds and clothing, the markups are, you know, they're embarrassing, 3-4 times. A book, the markup on a book is 40%.
So,
you know, and it's a miserable business.
So it's probably hard to tell from the economy, you know, because there's been an economic turndown. But what is the trend? Are fewer people buying books, or how is that happening these days?
Well, books are a luxury item, and yeah, less people are buying books. And you know, there's the new generation of the internet who want free stuff. And who wants to spend $40 on a history book if you don't have to, you know, for school? So yeah, that's trend is not encouraging. But we are a niche market press. We have a set market, and you know, when we publish the right book, we're going to sell a lot of copies, and it's going to make a splash. And that's still encouraging.
Yeah. So what kind of sales do you have? I'm not looking for your bottom line number, but how many copies of a popular Mormon book tend to move? How many do you sell?
Salamander is our best seller. We sold like 60,000 copies of that.
Wow.
Some of our good solid histories, we sold 10,000 copies of. Mormon history is a tough sell generally. When I worked for Bench, I remember the George Cannon biography came out by Davis Bitten, and I had hand sold about 300 copies. And I remember Kurt and I were sitting there thinking, we better find out. They probably didn't do a big print run, and we ought to find out, how many copies are left, because we wanted to sock away some of the first editions, maybe 20 or 30 signed first editions, and just sock them away for 5 years, and let them age and mature and become valuable, and then pull them out and surprise our customers kind of thing. And I remember calling over to Desert Book, my buddies over there, and asking, what the print run. The print run, I think, was like 2000, I think it was, if I remember right. And I asked them, how many had Desert Book sold? And they had only sold about 500 or 600 copies. And, they'd sold only, as with their 30 stores, they'd sold only twice what I had sold personally, working for Kurt. So I think in the end, some of those books, those 2000 books, were remaindered. So wow. That's a pretty important biography. And yeah, and pushed by Desert Book, I think that's kind of telling.
Well, I'm surprised. It's something I've lamented before. As a people, there's probably who would self-identify in the United States, there's maybe 3 or 4 million Mormons, but how non-reflective we are as a people, how we don't, for the most part, I mean, the biggest percentage of the population doesn't really get into their own history that much, doesn't really ask the next question. I use an example. I read a little while ago that there's about the same number of Jews in the United States as there are Mormons, and they have 19 film festivals across the United States. We can't even marshal one, so it's sort of disappointing to me that more people aren't interested in digging down and finding that stuff. That's sort of heartbreaking to me.
The best way to hide stuff from Mormons is to publish it.
Yeah, that's probably true. So, personally, I found a lot of the stuff that Signature puts out to be pretty high quality. Have you guys received any publishing awards or any accolades that way?
We've won all the local awards at one point or another. We win awards from the Mormon History Association nearly every year. We are a regular winner of the best fiction from the Association for Mormon Letters. There's the big biography award out of Utah State. Oh, they're going to strangle me for drawing a blank. Anyway, that's like a $10,000 award for the author, and we've won that in the past. Our Wilford Woodruff biography by Tom Alexander won that. So yeah, we make the circuit as far as the awards and stuff. And one of our designers was the designer for the 2002 Winter Olympics, and our book covers are just top notch. Our typesetting by Connie is just, it's top shelf stuff. I think that we do a bang up job as far as production and making our books look really nice. And we have good proofreaders, good editors. I'm really proud to be associated with the products that we put out as far as the overall quality and the editing and the double checking and trying to do a good job.
Yeah,
I think we're the press to keep up with, as far as all that's concerned.
Yeah, everything that's come across my hands, which has been quite a few of your works, I've always been very impressed. So now, I don't know the mechanics. Do you have your own like printing press? Do you guys actually like crank them out?
A lot of people like to ask that. No, we contract the actual printing back east and locally. You know, there's Artistic Design and other printers here locally that do just really good printing. We do the editing, design, marketing here in house, and then everything else is contracted out. That's what most presses do, or publishers do.
So you don't have inky fingers or anything like that.
No, but I love going over there. My first job was in a printing company, and I walk into the, you know, those places and just go, oh, there it is, you know, that smell.
So do you all turn away a lot of authors or you know, there are a lot of people come to you wanting to publish books. I guess embedded in that is what's the selection criteria? Obviously, you can't put out a huge number of books each year. I mean, how do you decide what to do?
We used to do a lot more. We used to do as many as 15 a year. We're down to 8 to 10 books a year. We have 50 manuscripts sitting in the hopper at any one time. So, you know, if the problem is if you're a fiction piece or a documentary history, it could take 5-6 years. Jack Harrell, we just published his book, A Sense of Order. He's a BYU Idaho English professor. We just did his novel, which is being compared to The Backslider, by the way. It's top shelf. If you haven't seen it, and you ought to get your hands on it, it's a great read. He says he's published 2 books with us, and he says it's 4 years from the time that he starts talking to us to the time the book comes out. And he's been kind of expressed through the system. So yeah, it can take 6-8 years if it's in a competitive genre for us to get the book out. We like to do one genre, a variety of genres every year. So we'll do one fiction, one poetry, one documentary, one, you know, science piece, one comparative religion, one biography, you know, we like to spread it out as far as the types of books we do. One, women's studies. And if you're in one of those competitive genres, it's going to take a while. Right now, if you're doing good work in history or biography or women's studies, and or if you're doing women's studies or you're a woman author, we're really interested because we're short on that. Mormon studies is male dominated, and we like to spread that around as best we could.
Yeah, that's true. I've taken heat for that myself, of having too many men on and not enough women. So,
yep.
So we talked a little bit about some of the books, but there have been some controversies over the years. you guys have I don't know, received some negative attention, even some negative legal attention.
Yeah, but the problem with the legal attention is that I wasn't there. A lot of that predates me. And so I really can't talk firsthand. I can only talk second and third hand. So that's probably not the best of place to go. But what I do know is that it's unfortunate that we have had a lot of legal salvos sent our way, and I can only think of one hint of a legal salvo that we made, and yet there's this whole group of apologists out there saying that we're litigious. It's, from my vantage point, it's just humorous.
So the church has shown itself. You know, I think of the little coffee store down, I can't remember their names, down in Salt Lake, that had a picture of Angel Moroni drinking a cup of coffee, and you know, they
yeah,
they gave them a copyright infringement notice, and there's been others like that. Do you guys run into that sort of stuff much?
Yeah, every 2 or 3 years we'll run into something like that. And there's a legal team that goes to the LDS Booksellers Convention every year, and they just go around and you know, it's appropriate to protect your copyright stuff, but some of it is just harassment. And yeah, and there's some of that.
So I know one of the major series that you guys are sort of working on is the Significant Mormon Diaries. Maybe
Right.
I haven't read them all. I've read a couple. I need to get my hands on them. So talk about that series a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting because you know that goes back to is Signature Books an anti-Mormon press? You know, they we try to do a you know an array of types of books from, you know, publishing the journals of Joseph Smith. Right now, we're currently working on the Abraham H. Cannon Diaries. You know, and when we do these things, we get told we're anti-Mormon press, and yet here we are, we're trying to, you know, publish the works of the prophets and early Mormon leaders and stuff. Yeah, it's un that's part of that unfortunate discussion. But yeah, the series was started with the Joseph Smith's diaries in 1987 with Scott Follering. We caught a fair amount of heat for that. And since then, we've done 12 diaries. Boy, I wish I had a list of them real quick, but
when you say caught heat, what exactly do you mean? You just sort of.
there was those that didn't think that we had the legal right to publish it.
The old diaries,
Right.
you mean like they asserted that the church owned the copyright on those?
Yeah, there's someone owned the copyright. We had permission from the family to publish it, so
Oh,
we
okay.
owned. I mean, we had the right to publish it. So.
So, is there any sort of rivalry or perceived that now that the church is doing the Joseph Smith papers?
Well, the Joseph Smith paper seems to be response, and this seems to be their third attempt at that, maybe second attempt. And you know, the personal writings of Joseph Smith by Dean Jesse, I think is about the same time or predates, and I think that predates our project. And then clearly the papers of Joseph Smith, volume 1 and 2, was a response to Following's book. The third volume was supposed to essentially fill in the gaps and be the church's presentation of what we did. They never got the third volume done. The word I heard was it was part of the William Clayton diaries that because William Clayton kept the journals for Joseph Smith
Right.
For a period. And you know, there's some controversial stuff in there with regards to polygamy, and you know, there's the phrase in there about Joseph Smith using harsh measures on Emma to get her to be quiet. You know, and that would be a tough thing for our tradition to publish officially. And the third volume was announced. I even saw the flyers. I even, you know, knew guys that had typeset copies of it, but it was squashed. The Joseph Smith Papers seems to be an extension of that project, trying to do 30 volumes. We've seen two. I hope we want to encourage those guys to just keep going with that, and I hope that they get them all done.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
you know, this may be a problem, especially with the economy stuff. You know, that's an expensive project, and who knows how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. You know, the first two volumes haven't had much of anything new in them that, you know, wasn't already out there.
Oh, you know, the second one they did, the giant one, I don't have my copy in front of me, but yeah, it had new stuff. And you know, I talked to Mike Marquardt, and he was just giddy the day it came out. And he said he I think for a year it sat on his nightstand, and he, no, there's plenty of new stuff there, things that we hadn't seen before.
Oh, well, cool. Well, I've watched the series. I've got a copy of that one. I haven't read it like I should, but I'll have to go back and dig back into that one.
So anyway, yeah, and we have well, you know, we've done, as part of the series, we've done like Reed Smoot, L. John Nuttall, B.H. Roberts, Wilford Woodruff, Anthon Lund, you know, Joseph Smith, Rudger Clausen, and so forth. We have future plans to do Anthony Ivins, Brigham Young, James Talmage. Who was the university professor at, president at BYU? What's his name?
Wilkins?
Wilkins, yeah, we're doing Wilkins, which seems to be kind of out of place for this series, but yeah, we're planning on doing his diaries. Well,
so. It would be fascinating. Are his diaries out there? Does the family control them or the church?
Yeah, the family has given us permission to do them.
Well, I'm glad the families are holding on. My heart drops a little bit every time I hear about somebody donating their diaries to the church, because sometimes they sort of go down the memory hole.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's too bad.
So, what would you say in the past years have been sort of the moment that the publishing moments or things that Signature Books has been most proud of?
Well, like I said earlier, it's those moments when you've done something that you know from then on the discussion will be different. Just, I guess, recently would be George Smith's book, our owner, his book on Nauvoo polygamy. It seems to have excited and motivated a lot of people on all sides of the fence to do studies on Nauvoo polygamy. So that's kind of exciting to see the responses and the ongoing response to his book.
Yeah, that one's sitting on my nightstand. It's second in queue right now, so I'm looking forward to digging into that one.
Yeah, it's a fun one. You'll enjoy it. It'll keep you up at night.
So maybe that's also an interesting question. You know, you guys have delved into temple stuff a little bit. Most famously, probably The Mysteries of Godliness by Berger? How do you say his name? David John Berger?
David Berger, yeah.
Yeah. So what sort of reaction has that put your way?
You know, that's actually been he got a couple of nasty reviews early on. They weren't terribly scholarly, but other than that, it's received a lot of praise. The book's important. It's a good, solid, respectful overview of the history of temple worship. I think that the next step in that discussion has been Devery Anderson and Gary Bejera's two-volume set, award-winning set, Joseph Smith's First Quorum of the Anointed and Nauvoo Endowment Companies. They are essentially a chronological timeline of temple-related documents. The Quorum of the Anointed met in the Red Brick Store, and it was Joseph Smith's closest confidants. They were men and women, and they were the group that created the temple ceremony. And that group's meetings and activities is reported there chronologically. And that book ends the day the temple opens, and that's when the Nauvoo Endowment Companies start. And that's just, and that, the temple is only open for 3.5 months. So that book is all the documentary letters, diaries, and meetings and temple records in chronological order for that period. And then we're about to publish with Devery Anderson sort of the third volume in that, and that brings us from the Nauvoo Temple up to the year 2000 with regards to documents relating to official church pronouncements, letters from the First Presidency to individuals, and other published materials about the temple and changes in policy and so forth. It's actually going to be really fascinating.
Oh, wow. I'm excited for that. When's that coming out?
It'll be out probably in December, but on the same token, respectful, this, once again, this is our tradition, and we have a sense of where lines are, and or at least we hope we do. And
yeah, and you all have a really great kind of short essay that connects some of your books. I'll put a link up onto it on a short introduction to Mormon temples. And yeah, I think you've definitely been respectful. I think it's been a difficult thing. And there's not a lot of work. I mean, David Berger's work is great, but there's still, you read it and you realize there's still this big gap of writing that still needs to be done about the topic. And I think the church has done itself a disservice, because a lot of the information about the temples, this temple's changed over time, has been lost to the members. And it's the most important thing of their worship. And most members just don't understand it at all.
You know, but that's their call. I went out to the last Mormon History Association Mormon History Association meeting was in Independence, Missouri, and we went to the Hedrickites church, and they have a temple ceremony that has been handed down since Joseph Smith's time. But they only have a handful of members left. And I know that some of the guys were asking them and saying, have you guys ever written down your ceremony? And they haven't. And that there is a real possibility that this oral tradition of the temple ceremony, of the actual ceremony being handed down from person to person since the time of Joseph Smith, will be lost. And wow. Can you imagine as you know, at least I, as an endowed member of the church, have a sense of loss that there's going to be a narrative there that will be lost forever and be lost to history if those guys don't pass it on before they all kick off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have an affection for the temple. You know, I'm an endowed member, and I you know, back in the early days, I can't remember when it was, somebody snuck into the temple and took pictures. And then after that, the church took pictures and published them. This is a long time ago. And there's a picture there
we have the history of that in our version of the House of the Lord.
Uh-huh.
We have that whole story of the guy who broke into the temple. And we actually have the photographs of the guy, of his photographs in our version of the House of the Lord by James Talmadge.
And there's beautiful photos, but one of them it shows the door to, I can't remember which room, but there's a sword there. Now, if you know Masonic, you know, in Masonic tradition, there's a tire who guards the door. But I mean, that's completely lost, and it's just curious that there's this picture of the sword, but most Mormons wouldn't have any idea what that sword's doing, you know?
Well, my favorite is the spittoons you find in the temple in those early photographs.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
True.
You know, there's some fun narratives in the which one was it? In one of our recent documentaries, there's a narrative of Ebenezer Robinson walking past the red brick store, and he's walking with John Taylor, and John Taylor peels into the red brick store, goes up the stairs, and Ebenezer Robinson gets down about a block and realizes, oh shoot, I needed to tell, you know, Taylor something. So he walks back and he knocks on the door, and Taylor opens the door, and he's got a sword in his hand, and he's got this robe and costume on, and you know, and Ebenezer Robinson's wondering what that is in his journal.
So what do you guys have in the hopper? What things are about to come out that you're excited about?
Well, in the short term, once again, Devery Anderson's book on the development of LDS temple worship since 1846, our Abraham H. Cannon diaries, Leo Lyman's the editor. We've been posting on our website, on the excerpts page, some of the things that we found that haven't been published before, and people are going to find that interesting. His is a very candid and thoughtful and reflective diary that I think people are going to really enjoy, and it's very readable. We're going to be doing a Mormon Studies reader of various essays on Mormon Studies. Steve Taysom is the editor of that, and it's a pretty good array of Mormon scholars. Bob Reese is doing a compilation of scholars giving their story of why they stay Mormon, why they stay within the Mormon Church. We're doing a biography of Lorraine Kingston, who is a local fundamentalist who is also a midwife. She's probably the most famous midwife in Utah. And it's also a rare insight into the Kingston group, which is probably one of the more insular and quiet groups of the Mormon fundamentalists. And then probably the one that I'm really looking forward to is Nauvoo City High Council Minutes, City and High Council Minutes by John Dinger. It's going to have a pretty good narrative of the Nauvoo Expositor and how and why that came about. And I think that's going to be a great discussion when that book comes out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Tom, it's been really fun talking to you. I recommend Signature Books to everybody. Let's see, your website is signaturebooks.com. And do you guys actually sell books directly?
No. We like to push people to the bookstores. We have a website which has information. Also, our signaturebookslibrary.org has our out-of-print books. We've been putting them up for free. That's what we spent the past year doing, is we have over 50 of our titles.
Yeah, I feel a little guilty looking at them, I have to tell you, because I always feel like I should buy something.
No, it's all good. There's some great local vendors. There's down in Utah County, there's Confetti Antiques, Salt Lake, there's Benchmark Books, which is where I used to be their buyer. And, you know, it's a great bookstore. Sam Weller's locally. You know, Iowa State, there's some good ones. You know, there's Mormonabilia in California. And I'm doing a disservice to a lot of my vendors, but there's some really good vendors that carry all of our titles. And yeah, you should look around. But, you know, like I said, here in Salt Lake, Weller's and Benchmark do a good job of carrying all of our titles.
Well, thanks for coming on, Tom. It's been fascinating. Like I said, I love everything that I've read from you guys. I love, and I'm always, every time I go to your website, I want to buy more. So I'll at least try to do my part.
Thanks, John. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Well, like always, the discussion continues on the website at mormonexpression.com. You can find the links over to Signature Books. You can send us an email at mail@mormonexpression.com or give us a call at 801-906-6722.